Grace to you and peace from God who creates and redeems and sustains all things. Amen. It's the oddest thing this time of year in Easter because so many of our readings for the gospel are not post-resurrection appearances. They're things that happened just before Jesus was crucified. And the same is true with our gospel lesson from John this morning. As one of the commentators that I read this week said, it's really important to put this particular reading in context. Today's reading falls just after Jesus has had supper with his disciples. Judas, along with the other disciples, has received that last meal. And then it says, and Judas got up and went out, and it was night. Now John, the writer of the Gospel of John, makes liberal use of light and dark. It was night. And Judas, we all know where Judas was headed in this particular gospel. Judas is on his way out to betray Jesus. And not long from now, Peter will deny Jesus. All the disciples will run away. And Jesus will be crucified and buried. So now when Judas had gone out, Jesus said this, now the Son of Man will be glorified, and God has been glorified in him. And if God has been glorified in him, God will also glorify him in God's own self and will glorify him at once. And then Jesus tells them what he means. All of that language about glory and glorification sounds so cool. Glorified. He's going to be raised up. We're going to make a big deal. It's a party for Jesus. Finally, he will get the recognition, and the angels will come down in torrents like rain and lift him up into glory. But Jesus says this. Little children, I am only with you a little longer. And where I am going, you cannot come. And maybe will not come. And yet, here is what I tell you. I give you this new commandment that you love one another. For me, this moment in John is its most powerful and most difficult moment. That you should love one another. I think, like the first disciples, we have some difficulty parsing out exactly what that means and what it will mean for us in this day and age. Having given his disciples this commandment, this wonderful, powerful moment, you all know what happens. They will come and they will take Jesus and they will kill him, and the disciples will scatter and be afraid. In some cases, want to go back to what they were doing before they met Jesus. It's all understandable. It's all so human and so beautifully true. And it will take time for them to find their feet again, to learn what love looks like. It's so easy to interpret this particular gospel this particular commandment as something that, well, it applies to us, but it's just maybe not quite applies to us. But I think most of us would agree it should definitely apply to the people around us. I've struggled with this text because I know how hard it is and how hard it has been for me and for you as individuals to live it out with any authenticity or integrity. It's one of the things that we've struggled with. And in fact, I think it's partly why we've kind of had to understand ourselves in a new light, and maybe the new thing that Jesus is doing is just so hard that we're thankful for the grace and forgiveness that God gives us when we fail. I think at other times, though, we look at that love as a tool that we take out when we need it, and then conveniently can't find when we should use it. I certainly feel that way sometimes. Do you? Like, you know, the other day, it was really interesting. I found myself, it was a momentary moral conundrum. I got to work. We had a big group coming. It'd be about 50 sweet Adelines. They were going to use the nave all day. I needed to get some things cleaned up and some things ready. And the first thing I see as I come through the courtyard is there's some people camped out by the fish gate. And my first thought was, darn, I got to deal with this too. And I thought for a second, the easiest thing, and what I've been told to do by the local constabulary, is just call us. Call the police. We'll take care of it. But darn it, I'd already read this text. It took a minute. And for me, it was literally like, where's my tools? And I just finally knocked on that tent and I said, good morning. I said, I'm really sorry, but we have a big group coming today. Do you think it would be possible for you to move? And they were like, yep, no problem. You know, we waved at each other and, you know, they got away before I could open the thing up, the gate up, to let them use the bathroom and all of that stuff. And I just, as I reflected about that, I thought about how we just forget sometimes that the love that God has commanded us is not something we can take on or put on and take off at will. It's not just another tool that we use, that we take out when we need it, or that we lose when it's just too inconvenient, or forget to pick up when we put it down. There's certainly a practical side to that love, as one of the commentators noted. There's the simple stuff of taking care of each other. There's the feeding of the hungry. There's the being kind to each other. These are the kind of practical and daily ways that we can live out this love. But there is also something deeper and fuller. Peter learned something about that. For Peter, God's love seemed fairly simple and clear, right? If you love God, then you will follow God's commandments, which happen to include the dietary laws. And for Peter, at least in this particular lesson, he knows clearly what those boundaries are and what the tools are that he needs to pull out in order to be a faithful person of God. And then God gums it all up and sends a dream. It turns out that the love of God is not as simple as a prescribed list of do's and don'ts, or clean and unclean, acceptable and unacceptable. It is more complex and simple, both at the same time. And so God says to Peter in a dream, "Do not proclaim unclean what I have said is clean." And love gets bigger for it. Peter understands more deeply that love is not just something you can find in a book or quantify or list. Love clings to us like a second skin. It is woven into our very being in the waters of baptism and in creation itself. Jesus will say, "Love one another as I have loved you." And that's what makes all the difference. Jesus loved this agape to which we have been called both as individuals and as a community. We can't just take it off when it's convenient. We can't just pretend that it belongs to God and not to us. And that's the beauty and the freeing part of it. It turns out that you have been made for love and you will fail miserably at it. Just as I do. Over and over and over again. And yet it remains with us as an inexhaustible and irreplaceable part of our very being, a gift. I left part of my sermon over there. I'll be right back. So, as Rich and I have been building things around the church over the last little while, the funniest thing is who has the pencil? It's never Rich. And it's never me. So I think what God has done is God has bought us a whole bunch of pencils. As a matter of fact, I think of God's love as if I have tiny little pockets all over myself, which is probably what I should have grafted on, so that I won't have to look so hard for the love that God is calling me for and calling you for. As we think about this weekend where 10 more people died in racial hatred, where a war continues on, seemingly inexhaustible and unabated, where white supremacy and racism and misogyny and hopelessness seem to knock at our door every day, God still folds, enfolds, and infects and enriches you with God's love in ways that we can't even begin to understand. And the more we take off of that love, the more we give away, the more we exude and live and hold fast to that love that God has given us, the more likely it is in the end that we'll be a part of the new thing that God is doing in this place and in this world. For in love, there is hope. Amen. Our worship continues this morning. Rise as you're able, or if you desire to, it's ELW number 377.